claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
And that party, which will be come as you are, may be growing closer. In Gaza, we see the reason why the Israelis went all in for Joe Biden and opposed Donald Trump, who, in my opinion, would never have stood for this massive intrusion. Clearly, the Israelis have fabricated justifications to slaughter the Gazans. It's outrageous. But a predictable expansion of their harassment and abuse of the Palestinian people since the founding of Israel, which may go down in history as one of the greatest mistakes made by world powers in the history of civilization. Meanwhile, we have Israel deliberately obliterating media buildings to cover up the war crimes that will follow. The destruction of two important Gaza buildings housing 20 media outlets was both shocking and predictable. History shows if the media aren't around to document Israel's war crimes, it's a lot easier for Israel to commit them. Israel bombed the 10-story Al-Jawahar Tower, causing it to collapse. It had benevolently warned that the airstrikes were coming. The following day, it bombed the tower. Most reports had the building evacuated before being leveled. But the buildings were significant. A statement by the International Federation of Journalists, for example, noted the Al-Jawahar building housed the offices of 13 media institutions and GNOs, and an advisory by the Committee to Protect Journalists noticed at least 7 media outlets, including the Associated Press. Further statement by the same committee said the Israeli military defended the bombing of the building via email, bizarrely claiming it had acted within international law because it was allegedly housing Hamas intelligence and military offices. This is, of course, a typical fabrication of a justification for Israel to commit an atrocity. The building was on a main Gaza street surrounded by residential apartment buildings. It was unclear how many might have died from it. Here the author, a woman by the name of Eva Bartlett, who is doing a commendable job of reporting, explained, "I've witnessed this tactic with my own eyes in January 2009 while I was accompanying Palestinian Red Crescent medics. One of the bodies of the medics retrieved was by Kafa Loom Twaka, 35, killed by an Israeli missile strike in her backyard just minutes after a strike that killed a family member in the same house." I mean, this goes on and on and on. Here's a tweet. "Israel destroyed a Palestinian media building. Will organizations to protect journalists condemn this? Unlikely. During the 2009 Israeli massacre of Gaza, Israeli tanks shelled a media building I was in at least seven times. It had a number of media outlets, including Russia Today." And let me mention, we're not getting these reports from the mainstream American media. No, not at all. This is actually coming from RT. Meanwhile, here's another breaking. Israeli occupation warplanes completely destroyed a multi-story building known to host various media and journalism offices, as well as residential apartments in the middle of Gaza City. It was bad enough that Israel closed border crossings and wouldn't allow journalists into Gaza. I was already there. But then went on to target media to silence any honest reporting on its war crimes against Palestinians. This is just absolutely awful, but hardly surprising. The a series of airstrikes beginning early Sunday, continuing today, targeted two buildings, Al-Shawa and Husari Tower and Al-Shurga Tower, well known for housing numerous international and local news organizations. At least seven journalists were injured. One lost his right leg. Bibi declaring it's not over. Of course, it's not over. It's not going to be over until every single Palestinian is dead. I mean, that is obviously the objective. It's well known that the Israeli solution to the Palestinian problem is to load all Palestinians aboard a ship, float it out to sea, and sink it. That's the solution. Having journalists on the ground in a place like this is critical. In previous wars on Gaza, Israel has committed a litany of war crimes, including in 2009, targeting with a flechette bomb and killing a uniformed Palestinian medic as he worked to save injured civilians, firing more dart bombs on mourners the following day, killing six, including a pregnant woman, targeting with sniper fire two medics I was with, including during ceasefire hours, assassinating children and infants, drone striking a 14-year-old during ceasefire hours, raining white phosphorus down heavily on civilian areas throughout Gaza, bombing a school, sheltering the displaced, bombing hospitals, and repeatedly shelling a home Israeli soldiers had forced 60 members of an extended family into, killing 26, including 10 children and 7 women. Many of these actions, of course, such as using white phosphorus, not to mention, you know, bombing hospitals and the like, are clear violations of international law, the Geneva Conventions, and the UN Charter. But Israel acts with impunity, full well knowing that not even the United Nations can condemn them because the United States will veto any such resolution. We have done it again and again and again, not just 10 or 20, but dozens and dozens and dozens of times. The United States has been facilitating the atrocities committed by the Israelis virtually from its inception. In 2009, 2012, 2014, Israel committed more unspeakable crimes of war, destroying entire neighborhoods, massacring the residents, shelling children on a beach, drone strike in Atin hours before a ceasefire, and many others. Now, only after a few days of Israeli bombardment, horrific reports are emanating from Gaza, including accounts of Palestinians killed by what is believed to be toxic gas, again prescribed by international law, and Israeli precision bombings killing entire families. As of May 14th, Gaza's health ministry was reporting at least 119 killed, including 31 children. But the number is going to be vastly larger. Across occupied Palestine, Israelis are calling for Palestinians' deaths, with a rabbi allegedly saying, "I call on you to kill all Arabs," and others using Facebook and Telegram to organize attack mobs. And it was recently reported that Israel's defense minister, Benny Gantz, threatened more destruction than he ordered in Gaza in 2014. At that time, he was Israel's chief of staff, commanding the 51-day assault that killed more than 2,200 Palestinians, including 551 children. Also reported is an Israeli MP's calls for the Israeli army to flatten the strip. That is nothing new. As I wrote back in 2014, during the 8 days of slaughter, Israeli figures called to blow Gaza back to the Middle Ages, destroying all the infrastructure, including roads and water, and to flatten all of Gaza. There should be no electricity in Gaza, no gasoline or moving vehicles, nothing, said the deputy Israeli prime minister, Eli Shihai and Gilad Sharon, respectively. Mind you, these are all widely recognized war crimes under international law. The UN chief has pled for immediately de-escalation, but it's not going to happen. Israel's bombing spree of media targets has been rightly condemned, where the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate stated that the targeting of media headquarters and the brutal bombardment of Gaza is part of the full-fledged war crimes committed by the Israeli occupation authorities against the Palestinian people, calling for the United Nations and the Red Cross to provide urgent protection to journalists and the media and to activate Security Council Resolution 2222, which includes the protection of journalists and oblige the occupation to fulfill that resolution. But of course, it's not going to happen. They act, as I observe, with complete impunity, where we even have this figurehead of a president in the United States whose weakness, I believe, is one of the prime reasons that Israel supported Biden-Harris over Trump and Pence. While journalist protection committees have condemned the recent Israeli bombings, Western corporate media generally haven't. Imagine, however, if this were taking place in Syria, if Syrian or Russian planes premeditatedly bombed and leveled media buildings there. That would be front page news for days, if not weeks. Now, it appears one of the major reasons was that the Israelis had a plan to trap Hamas underground. They issued a report of an Israeli ground assault, including the use of Apache attack helicopters, such that Hamas went underground into a vast set of tunnels they have there. The Hamas fighters scurried to grab hidden weapons to prepare for the expected surge of Israeli troops. But the tweet was fake, and devastating bunker buster airstrikes then rained down on 150 targets. Scores are believed to have died in the tunnels dubbed the Hamas Metro, smashed by 450 missiles in 40 minutes. More than 160 aircraft led the assault, and top brass announced the complex operation had been a success. In other words, Hamas was largely buried alive underground. Very clever from a military point of view, but completely atrocious under international law. Hamas has launched more than 1,800 rockets from the blocked Palestinian coastal strip this week. But frankly, none of those rockets, such as they may be, appear to be doing any good whatsoever. I even wonder, question, challenge the number. Bottle rockets do virtually no damage whatsoever, and the numbers of the alleged Israelis who have been killed or harmed is minuscule. Meanwhile, Israeli tanks and soldiers are continuing to mass at the border. 9,000 reserve troops drafted to support a planned ground offensive. But Hamas fighters dug into defensive positions, such as Ramain, are certain to put up fierce resistance if such a mission were launched, sparking fears of a bloodbath. But when you look at photographs of the devastation, it's rather complete. It's rather total. A very clever move, by the way, to encourage Hamas to enter the underground tunnel network and then destroy it. Here, the article describes that these tunnels were built by Palestinians to gain access into Israel, where Israeli forces would have faced brutal house-to-house fighting and a deadly obstacle course of bombs and booby traps. While there continue to be fired volleys of rockets, Israel has now launched over 600 airstrikes, phoning warnings to enemy leaders to evacuate civilians minutes before those tower blocks were felled, where numerous Hamas leaders have died. 9 Israelis have been killed, including one soldier and a 6-year-old boy. But I tell you, the death toll among the Palestinians is going to be staggering. Now, while I have differences with Noam Chomsky, you can find my critique of Chomsky online on Fetzer on Chomsky, where I'm taking him to task over his views about JFK, claiming, you know, arguments for a conspiracy were meaningless because no public policy issues were at stake, as though withdrawing from Vietnam, as though dismantling the CIA, as though cutting the oil depletion allowance, as though prosecuting the mob, as though opposing Israel's acquisition of nuclear weapons were not all major public policy issues, and explaining away what happened on 9/11. I mean, it's unbelievable. Where in one of these critiques you can find, I explain why I take exception to Chomsky, and then you switch to Chomsky saying exactly what I take exception to his having said. In the other, more extensive, I also offer a critique of Chomsky's contributions to linguistics, such as they are, by putting syntax in primary position. I have published extensively on these matters, and to understand language, you must appreciate it's a dispositional pragmatic phenomenon of individuals interacting together, using words to refer to things and events and communicate, where semantics follows from the study of pragmatics, or the use of language, in order to create a model of the meaning of various words and phrases. But where syntax is only a late emerging phenomenon, when you have a semantic sufficiently complex that you need to organize the words in terms of adjectives, nouns, verbs, adverbs, and the like. So that Chomsky has really reversed the order for the study of language, which is why ultimately, in my opinion, it's going to come to naught. Nevertheless, in this instance, I agree with Chomsky when he makes the following observation. You take my water, burn my olive trees, destroy my house, take my job, steal my land, imprison my father, kill my mother, bombard my country, starve us all, humiliate us all, but I am to blame. I shot a rocket back. How apropos is that? Meanwhile, we find the same technique the Israelis are using of taking out the media so they can't report on war crimes occurring right here in the USA, of censoring any alternative media that are explaining what's going on so the public cannot learn about it. Here we have Vimeo canceling Mike Lindell's MyPillow account. This is worse, he says, than what Twitter did to me and my company. Big box stores like Costco, Sam's Club, Bed Bath & Beyond, Kohl's, Fairway, and Kroger have all stopped carrying MyPillow products, not because they're inferior. Indeed, every indication I have is that they're actually superior, but on the basis of politics. So these big stores are deciding whose products are going to carry and who's not based on political considerations. This is just disgusting beyond words. Christian Patriot and MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell will lose over $68 million plus this year alone, thanks to decisions by these big box stores to punish him for fighting to expose the election fraud in the November 2020 election. He's been permanently suspended on Twitter. His absolute brute video has been removed from Vimeo and Google-owned YouTube, which was completely brilliant. We had an expert in mathematical modeling and mathematical analysis explain how the same algorithm was used based on the prior census to manipulate the vote in counties all across the nation. I mean, it's a devastating indictment. Why are social media bullies allowed to decide what Americans can or cannot see? Who made them the ultimate judge and jury about which news is acceptable and which is not? When Americans flocked to YouTube, it was because the platform gave us a place to see original content. Now, however, it's where you can see content big tech overlords have decided fits their narrative. It's become anything but a free speech platform. Last week, after never having a single violation, 100% fed up, a very good, informative, alternative news source was permanently suspended from YouTube. The reason they gave for suspending our account was we had received multiple violations or violated their community standards. We were guilty of neither of those charges. We appealed the decision, asked to provide with evidence one example of a single violation. They did not do that. They merely stated after reviewing our appeal, they decide the decision will stand. And by the way, I'm convinced almost all of this is automated. There's no actual human being from YouTube who ever sees any of this. It's going on at such a vast scale that it would be very difficult and time consuming. So they simply don't bother. 100% Fed Up has also been permanently banned from Twitter and Pinterest and LinkedIn. We've lost over 90% of our traffic on Facebook and several years ago discovered our conservative news website earned a spot on Google's famous blacklist of sites they demote. In other words, they bury links to articles we publish when users search for topics we've covered. I, of course, personally have experienced this. I was blocked out of my own Facebook page, although I understand it's still active. I was knocked off of Twitter, even though I had some 2,700 tweets and close to 5,000 followers. I was just given the boot. One day I'm there, the next day I'm not. No word, no warning, no explanation, period. Mike Lindell observes, "This is worse than what Twitter did to me and my company. It affects my business, the Lindell Recovery Network, and the entrepreneurs with whom I work." He sent the Daily Beast a screenshot, the email he and his team received from Vimeo on Wednesday, which reads, "Your account was terminated for violating Vimeo's terms of service and community guidelines. We do not allow accounts that upload content created by or mainly featuring a banned user, as the purpose of your account is to promote content from a banned user. It has been removed. We wish you best of luck in finding a hosting platform better suited to your needs." As though that weren't absurd enough, get this. Twitter suspends a Spanish politician for saying a man cannot get pregnant because he has no uterus or ovaries. What could be more obvious? A Spanish MP was suspended by Twitter for 12 hours after he responded to a news article and noted that men do not have the biological ability to become pregnant. Duh. Francois José Contreras, an MP for the populist right-wing party Vox, posted a news article to Twitter about a Spanish female-to-male transgender who is pregnant and recently gave birth to a daughter, with the article claiming this made him a father. Contreras, in his tweet, said this was ridiculous. A man cannot get pregnant, he tweeted. A man does not have uteries or ovaries. One would have thought there's no issue here. He posted the text of his email on his Facebook page, where he revealed he was also forced to delete the offending tweet. The Spanish MP described the incident as being biological fascism, joking the next time he'd be suspended for saying 2 + 2 = 4, which is, would not be surprising in this day and age. It's absolutely stunning. He spoke to LifeSite News about the incident, saying a number of his supporters had created the hashtag "A man cannot be pregnant" to rally against Twitter censorship. We will not yield to Twitter imposing a twisted and anthropologically wrong worldview. We will continue to speak the truth about human nature. Biological truth should not be regarded as hate speech. It's biology, not bigotry. What could be more obvious? During the recent Spanish election in January, Vox, previously part of the governing coalition, had their official party account suspended by Twitter after publishing statistics that North African immigrants were responsible for extremely high rates of crime in the country. Yet left-wing extremists have been allowed to repeatedly publish threats to attack and kill members of Vox, with Twitter leaving those accounts and tweets up unmolested. The problem, of course, has to do with the control of our government, and that these media sites are allowed to run rampant with full support of the Democrat Party, which has betrayed the trust of the American people. It is outrageous. More to come after this break. I'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
The attempts to bring us together and unify the nation promised by the Biden administration seem to be crumbling, falling apart, where we have Palm Beach officials reportedly planning for a Trump indictment, and the word extradition has been mentioned. A story out of Politico reports that officials in Palm Beach have been making contingency plans just in case the twice-impeached former President Donald Trump were indicted on one of myriad possible charges being investigated by Manhattan District Attorney Cy Vance Jr. One of the issues facing officials is a seldom-used Florida statute giving the governor the power to intervene in an extradition of Florida residents to other states in the union. This, of course, would be DeSantis, who's standing tall here, really turning into an American hero. It isn't clear what these contingency plans consist of. Is it making sure Trump is justifiably extradited if the requests were made, or how they might prolong his stay in Florida in defiance of the law? Mind you, this is an article coming from Daily Kos, which is a left-wing extreme version. But sometimes you can gain insights into how they're perceiving the issue by reviewing them. A clerk at the Circuit Court of Palm Beach County told Politico, "The statute leaves room for interpretation that the governor has the power to order a review and potentially not comply with the extradition notice." And according to the Daily Kos, we all know how corrupt GOP officials are when it comes to the interpretation of laws. Their fascistic reading of our country's legal system are the reasons we've loaded up the country's judicial system with right-wing judges. I mean, how offensive and contrary to the facts are that? Vance has been making headlines as his investigations into the Trump Organization have ramped up over the past few months, where it's been reported now Vance brought in former prosecutor Mark Pomerantz to help with a long history of prosecuting white-collar crimes. He also has interviewed Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. concerning, again, remember, this is the Daily Kos, the murky self-dealing aspects between the Trump Organization, the family's private business, and Trump's inaugural committee. The New York District Attorney's Office has also reportedly expanded their investigation into Trump family real estate holdings and has been able to secure some of Trump's long-hidden tax returns. whether or not Vance's investigation will uncover how Jared Kushner and Ivanka's personal wealth ballooned while they were technically White House advisors remains to be seen. An interesting aspect of the Trump extradition story is that while Trump does have a residency in the Sunshine State, Florida, he usually moves to New Jersey's Bedminster during the summer months. While New Jersey has a similar extradition statute to Florida, the governor of the state is a Democrat, Phil Murphy. Frankly, Daily Coast claims, almost any governor not named DeSantis would be one step closer to justice. In March, Vance announced his plan to retire at the end of 2021. Hopefully, the Coast says, he can place Donald Trump and friends back in a New York court before he leaves. Meanwhile, we have a bit of a trivial but nevertheless fascinating exchange between AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene. It appears to me AOC is extremely jealous that Marjorie Taylor Greene is getting as much or in some cases even more media coverage than is she. According to AOC, she's used to people like Greene, people. These are the kinds of people I threw at a bars all the time, the New York Democrat told reporters on Capitol Hill. For me, this isn't even about how I feel, Ocasio-Cortez said. It's that I refuse to allow young women, people of color, people who are standing up for what they believe, to see this kind of intimidation attempts by a person who supports white supremacists in our nation's capital. And by the way, there's a latest report that I'll be following up that the Capitol Police gave permission to the protesters to enter the Capitol, notwithstanding that these appear to have been Antifa members who were masquerading as Trump supporters, where the timing was exquisite to disrupt the discussion and debate about evidence of electoral theft, which is exactly what Nancy Pelosi wanted to do to kill it. Where since she is in control of the Capitol Police, it's really not much of a challenge to figure out who was actually responsible for what happened at the Capitol and where John Sullivan, the extremely well-known, even notorious Antifa leader, Brother James, said that John had led 226 Antifa members into the Capitol. We have a host of footage about what happened there, where you can see managers and directors telling them where to go and what to do. And photographs of the Capitol Police being taken with the protesters, selfies, taking photographs. Greene is being criticized by Democrats after reports from two Washington Post reporters that she repeatedly yelled, "Hey, Alexandria," which didn't stop when Greene addressed her. She wants to debate the Green New Deal with AOC, to whom she, Marjorie, has referred as a chicken and a radical socialist. She reportedly also called after her or called her out for supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, which Green, in my opinion, 100% accurately called a terrorist group, as well as Antifa. Greene denied her behavior was aggressive. Well, I would say it was a bit aggressive, so that's pointless. Ridiculed AOC for saying she threw people like her out of bars. She throws out paying customers. Is that how she feels? She throws out paying customers? You know, it would be nice if they would treat us civilly. But ever since January 6th, they can't even treat us with respect. And we were just as much victims of the riot here, too. We didn't cause it. All the lies they say on and on, you know, they need to be civil. None of them are civil. Greene also insisted she was telling AOC, you need to debate me. You need to defend your policy. There's nothing wrong with that. I am 100% on the side of Marjorie Taylor Greene here. AOC, also sometimes referred to as occasional cortex, really is a flyweight, but she has a certain charisma. She's an attractive woman. She's articulate, well-spoken. if she only had more content and substance to her policies and positions, she could be an impressive figure in political circles. Meanwhile, she's garnering a lot of attention, but whether she's going to have a continuing ongoing presence after the next election of the House in 2022 is an open question. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi unsurprisingly called Green's words a verbal assault and said the situation could end up being discussed by the House Ethics Committee. But it's Pelosi's behavior who really needs to be subjected to a House Ethics Committee review. Meanwhile, we have news from Arizona. Maricopa County deleted the entire 2020 general election database days before equipment was delivered for the audit. Last week, Gateway Pundit reported about the emergency meeting by the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors after the county was unable to provide passwords to auditors performing an audit, which meant, of course, they had no control over the election, which was turned 100% over to Dominion voting machines. This afternoon, it was discovered the entire database for the 2020 general election, showing the results tally and reporting, has been deleted. The president of the Arizona Senate, Karen Fan, has written a letter to Chairman Sellers of the Election Committee. Dear Chairman Sellers, I'm writing to seek your assistance and cooperation in the resolution of three serious issues that have arisen in the course of the Senate's ongoing audit of the returns of the November 3rd, 2020 general election in Maricopa County. First, ongoing non-compliance with the legislative subpoenas. This is embarrassingly bad. To date, attorneys for Maricopa County have refused to produce virtual images of routers used in connection with a general election, relying on a conclusory and unsupported assertion that providing the routers would somehow endanger the lives of law enforcement officers or operations or the protected health information and personal data of Maricopa County citizens. I have no doubt that's complete and total bullshit, 100% bullshit. Similarly, the county's assertion that producing the internet routers for inspection would cost up to $6 million. I mean, how absurd can you get? Seems at odds with Deputy County Attorney Joseph LaRue's prior representation to audit liaison Ken Bennett that the routers had already been disconnected from the county's network and were prepared for imminent delivery to the Senate. Separately, Maricopa County has refused to provide the passwords necessary to access vote tabulation devices. Its attorneys insist that the county does not have custody or control of this information is belied by the county's conduct of its own audits, which, if they were as comprehensive as they purport to be, almost certainly would have entailed use of the passwords. Second, chain of custody and ballot organization anomalies. As the audit has progressed, the Senate's contractors have become aware of apparent omissions, inconsistencies, and anomalies relating to Maricopa's handling, organization, and storage of ballots. This is very extensive, very detailed, and absolutely stunning stuff, but not surprising, because, of course, the Democrats are going to do everything they can to conceal the evidence of massive fraud. Indeed, the estimates I have show that rather than lose Arizona to Joe Biden by 10,000 votes, Donald Trump beat him by over a million. In Arizona, unsurprisingly, went for Trump in a big way. And that was illustrated by anecdotal evidence as well, where Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made a joint appearance in Phoenix just weeks before the election. And as even embarrassed reporters had to acknowledge, nobody came. Nobody came. He had a double treat here. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris together in Phoenix weeks before the election. No one came. No one had the least interest. These are two of the most insignificant political figures in American history. Were they not being used as stooges to conceal a very powerful campaign of aggression where it appears that Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Susan Rice are manipulating the situation behind the scene, where I have a report that Susan Rice is the one who is managing Joe Biden's every word and deed. Third point, deleted databases. We have recently discovered the entire database directory from the D drive of the machine EMS primary has been deleted. This removes election-related details that appear to have been covered by the subpoena. In addition, the main database for the election management system software results tally and reporting is not located anywhere on the EMS primary machine, even though all of the EMS clients reference that machine as the location of the database. This suggests the main database for all election-related data for the November 2020 general election has been removed. Can you please advise as to why these folders were deleted and whether there are any backups that may contain the deleted folders? Meanwhile, we have another update from the AZ Audit Director, Ken Bennett, who claims that following the explosive news that the entire database showing the results tally and reporting had been deleted, explained that the audit team has counted and examined close to 500,000 ballots and nearly a quarter of the 2.1 million total to be examined. He said they have more tables up today and running than any other day, nearly 29 tables examining ballots. Meanwhile, Code Monkey Z has posted a couple of tweets of pretty interesting. If Dominion had access to the machines in Maricopa County did not, then who deleted the databases? One. Here's another. They got to get their story straight and make sure nobody is planning to be the first to confess. Third, I have a strong feeling we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. Fourth, the image is of all the files that have been undeleted. That shows it was recovered by the forensic IT teams. It's not to show us that they were deleted. It's to show us they have it all. Devoutly to be wished. Meanwhile, surprise, surprise, as COVID vaccines drive record profits, CEOs get ultra rich after off of massive pay packages and questionable stock sales. According to a February report by Accountable US, a nonprofit, nonpartisan public advocate and watchdog organization that monitors public corruption, executives at five drug companies, including Moderna, Pfizer, J&J, Emergent BioSolutions, contracted to manufacture J&J's vaccine, and Novavax, made $250 million dumping company stock during the first 6 months of Operation Warp Speed. According to U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filings from the beginning of September through November of 2020, executives and directors at Pfizer, Moderna, Novavax, and Emergent, who received government COVID vaccine funding, made stock transactions valued at a net profit of more than $105 million. But that, of course, is just the tip of the iceberg. As pharmaceutical companies make billions from COVID vaccines and reassure investors, plans are underway for boosters and annual shots. Just hear the cash machines clicking. CEOs of Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson are pocketing millions with massive compensation packages and questionable stock sales. In his weekly notes to investors last month, Bernstein analyst Ronnie Gal offered shocking revenue estimates for Pfizer and Moderna's mRNA vaccines: $24 billion in revenue for Pfizer, $14 billion for Moderna. Now, bear in mind, Sherry Tenpenny has described the mRNA vaccines for which they're making billions in profits as perfectly designed killing machines. Perfectly designed killing machines. By the fourth quarter, Gal and his team project industry-wide COVID vaccine revenues reaching more than $18 billion per quarter. The Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna shots will account for roughly $11 billion, with the remaining split equally between J&J, AstraZeneca, and Novavax. Pfizer's first quarter revenue report released May 4th showed $3.5 billion in revenue generated during the first 3 months by the company's COVID vaccine, making it the biggest source of Pfizer's revenue. The company now anticipates revenue of $26 billion for its COVID vaccine, up from a previous estimate of $15. This is just terrible, actually god-awful. Meanwhile, Senator Rand Paul catches Fauci in a lie, warning about the dangers of labs producing juiced-up viruses like COVID-19. Rand Paul is distinguishing himself. During a Senate Health Committee hearing on COVID-19, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul pressed Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci over the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic and whether or not NIH sent money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Disturbing reports about Fauci's involvement have now surfaced, implicating Fauci for being involved with producing the COVID virus in the Chinese lab. Fox News Revolution host Steve Hilton unloaded on Fauci, telling his viewers that after the facts he's sharing with the public, Fauci was going to need friends in high places. Well, maybe Hilton hasn't noticed Fauci has friends in high places. Hilton explained how the influenza virus was injected from one ferret to another. According to his study, or the studies he's uncovered, ferrets have respiratory systems very similar to humans. About 10 years ago, scientists at the Erasmus Medical Center in the Netherlands manipulated the virus in ferrets until it was mutated enough to be transmitted through the air. Thus, gain-of-function research was born. The idea to engineer the most contagious deadly viruses in a lab to help us better prepare to find them. But, you know, if you got to engineer them in a lab, the likelihood they would have evolved is practically zero. Meanwhile, Hilton observed, imagine if a deadly virus engineered in a lab to be incredibly contagious somehow escaped from a lab, it could wreak havoc. Precisely because it was designed to do precisely this. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is announcing the rule is now simple. Get vaccinated or wear a mask until you do. The choice is yours. Ironically, only days later, the CDC reversed its position on masks, declaring anyone who's vaccinated can go without the mask, which means basically everyone can go without the mask. Where Costco, Walmart, and other big companies have now dropped their mask requirement. Meanwhile, here are 9 indisputable facts linking Fauci to the origins of COVID-19, coming from Dr. Peter Navarro. Is Anthony Fauci the father of the Wuhan virus? Number 1, Fauci used NIH grant money to help fund the Wuhan Virology Lab. 2, the American taxpayer funds were funneled to the lab through Peter Daszak and the New York City-based EcoHealth Alliance under the auspices of a nearly $3.7 million grant. 30 studies have been published since 2014, over half with authors from the Chinese Communist Party-run scientific organizations and in 13 cases from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Here's another. 3, Fauci, together with NIH Director Francis Collins, went behind the back of the Trump White House in December 2017 to overturn a 2014 Obama administration decision to ban the use of gain-of-function tools to increase the lethality of viruses, where Australian journalist Sherry Markson has revealed Fauci used a low-level White House meeting to fly below the radar. Now, let me say, I'm not enthusiastic about Barack Obama over a whole wide range of issues. But having made the decision to ban the use of gain-of-function to increase lethality of viruses in 2014, that was a good thing. I congratulate Obama administration for that. 4, before the pandemic hit, Peter Daszak bragged in a TV interview about how simple it was to use gain-of-function at the Wuhan lab to make viruses more deadly. 5, Obama's National Security Council recommended banning gain-of-function research because of the high risk that a weaponized virus might escape from even the most secure lab. 6, Deadly pathogens have routinely escaped from the highest security labs, including a virus that escaped from the Beijing Virology Institute and caused the first SARS virus in 7. The U.S. State Department warned in 2018 about a lack of safety protocols at the Wuhan lab and the possibility that Wuhan sloppiness could trigger a second SARS outbreak. 8. Fauci's NIH helped fund the research of Ralph Baric from the University of North Carolina, who used gain-of-function techniques with China's infamous bat lady. And 9, numerous experts have now agreed that SARS-CoV-2 most likely originated from the Wuhan lab. Meanwhile, here we have a tweet from Mark Meadows over this reversal by the CDC. The CDC needs to answer for what exactly changed in the last 3 months, allowing them to suddenly go from masks to no masks for vaccinated people overnight during Biden's worst news week so far. The science didn't change. It seems only the politics did. So you have, during Biden's worst news week so far, they give a break to the American people by relieving their mask mandate. Here's another. The White House ordered the CDC to declare COVID over days after irrefutable evidence of Fauci funding the Wuhan lab came to light, and he was caught lying to Congress. They need this all to go away now. Watch how fast Fauci disappears. It'll be like he never existed. That is devoutly to be wished. Meanwhile, I'm glad to take calls during the second hour, the number 540-352-4452. Call in, Mitchell, field your call. Meanwhile, Brazil has suspended AstraZeneca after a pregnant woman died. Look how responsible they're being in Brazil. You got a woman dying and they immediately suspend it? Norway is also suspending. There are more and more studies tying AstraZeneca to blood clots, which appears to be one of the principal mechanisms, such that Russia has even revised their medical protocol to recommend aspirin if you're dealing with a COVID patient, because the blood clots are the major problem and aspirin dissolves blood clots. They sent home 14,000 patients in a single day after an aspirin regimen. That's coming from Russia, not the United States. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
In case I haven't mentioned it before, a month ago, actually on April 17th, I published a piece on Oon's Review, What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories, which has now garnered over 850 comments, And what I'm doing there is arguing that because conspiracy theories are theories, they ought to be appraised by the same criteria that are used to appraise scientific theories, which include the clarity and precision of the language in which they're expressed, their scope of application for explanation and prediction, the degree of empirical support they receive from the available evidence, and the overall simplicity, elegance, or economy with which they achieve those effects, where it's, of course, indispensable to sort out authentic from inauthentic evidence, which becomes crucial in each of these cases. Once you've done that, it usually becomes very straightforward to sort out what actually happened. For example, in the case of JFK, we discovered the official autopsy x-rays had been altered to conceal the fist-sized blowout at the back of the head. And we discovered that another brain was substituted for that of JFK to appear in photographs and diagrams in the National Archives, and that the whole movies of the assassination, the most well-known of which is the Zapruder, have been massively edited. In fact, more frames have been removed from the Zapruder than remain in the extant version, which has 487. I estimate as many as 1,000. And when you consider that these documents and records were the hands of the American military naval officers at Bethesda and the Secret Service, it becomes highly implausible to suggest that this was done by pro or anti-Castro Cubans, or that the KGB was responsible, or even the mafia None of them could have extended their reach into Bethesda Naval Hospital to alter x-rays under control of medical officers of the U.S. Navy. I mean, it's just staggering. So it turns out that much of the discussion has been an effort to salvage or defend the official account of 9/11. Whereas one fellow there who calls himself the truth vigilante, who has been repeatedly trying to refute evidence I produce that none of the four 9/11 aircraft actually crashed, to the point that I'm suggesting he should redesignate himself as a truth vampire because he's trying to suck the truth out of 9/11 research. Now, I encourage every one of you to take a look at this article and the discussion thread, What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories at Oon's Review. I think you'll find it quite fascinating. Meanwhile, we have a couple of callers on the line. Bruce from Texas is here. Bruce, welcome to The Raw Deal.
Yes, thank you, Jim. You were mentioning the East Point member of Irie
Uploaded. Bruce, your voice is there's lots of static. Can you get a little better connection? Or just speak up. See, maybe if you, go ahead.
I switched to speaker. Is this better?
Yes, overwhelmingly better.
Okay, great. I won't be able to reference material, but I think I can memorize it good enough. Remember that I re-uploaded 9/11, the nuclear evidence, your presentation with Don Fox, and it was taken down by YouTube. And this was not a machine or an algorithm that did it. It was a person. I protested the removal, and within hours, I got a reply back that said it was hate speech.
Hate speech to expose who actually was responsible for 9/11? Yeah, see, that's another perfect example, by the way, Bruce, because if the destruction of the Twin Towers was a nuclear event, the very idea it was done by 19 Islamic terrorists becomes a manifest absurdity, as indeed it was from the beginning. But, you know, between the destruction of the South Tower and the North, the mainstream media, the anchors were reporting a call from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine claiming responsibility, as though this kind of high-tech, sophisticated operation could have been carried out by Palestinians. And they even showed footage of Palestinians rejoicing, intending thereby to create the impression that this was concurrent or simultaneous with the events going on in New York, when in fact it turned out to be archival footage from a distant religious or political event where Palestinians had cause to rejoice. They were just as slack-jawed and dumbfounded at what was going on in New York as was most of the rest of the world, who were not aware of what was going on. This was an Israeli op. So any evidence that exposes Israel is going to be treated as hate speech. I'm sorry to say, but Israel is anything but the ally or friend of the United States. They want to use us and abuse us. It's embarrassingly bad, Bruce, but I am not surprised.
I remember an interview with one of the police officers that arrested the Israelis. They were in the van with the airplane on it, and one of them stated to the police officer, and this is in this police report, that we are not your problem. It's the Palestinians are your problem.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
This is, in my opinion, typical of Israeli overreach. They go a bridge too far. You know, I think it's that they have such a low opinion of the American public. They've got to spell it out, you know, in a very emphatic fashion, just as by showing that archival footage. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad. Palestine had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. The 19 alleged Islamic terrorists, 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia. None of them were from Iraq or Afghanistan. And, of course, Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan. He was instrumental in getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen. They used to shoot down Soviet planes and helicopters. He was an officer in the CIA, Colonel Tim Osman. He was visited by an official from the agency at a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death on 15 December 2001 from his medical maladies, where it's tough to get dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan. There were local obituaries. He was buried in an unmarked grave. And by the 26th of December, both Fox News and CNN had reported that Osama bin Laden was dead. Nevertheless, Barack Obama found it politically expedient to resurrect him and have him die again in a fake raid on a compound in Pakistan to position himself for a triumphal reelection, forgetting the most wanted man in the world. Bruce, this is American politics. It's 90% smoke and mirrors. 90%.
It sure is. Let me hit one more topic, or it's related to the same issue, 9/11. When you mentioned Noam Chomsky, he's a limited hangout. In fact, I think he's a Siamese. Excuse me. I'm looking. I sent you the link to the article. It's a Turkish article, and it reveals that Pat Tillman, who was an NFL player who volunteered to join the U.S. Army Rangers following 9/11, and he was shot by friendly fire across the forehead with 3 shots. But before that, he was in correspondence with Noam Chomsky, and he was going to make an interview with him concerning the criminal actions that are taking place in Afghanistan. Now, either that communication was intercepted or Noam Chomsky turned it over to the people who eventually killed Pat Tillman. And then we had the whole, there was a cover-up. And it's really tragic, you know.
I reported a lot about that at the time. Yes, many sources, I'm hardly the first, have concluded that Noam Chomsky has a long history with the CIA. I believe Pat Tillman, who wanted to come back and lead an anti-war movement, was deliberately taken out for that very reason, that he mistakenly placed confidence in Noam Chomsky, who betrayed him. So, Bruce, I think you're right up and down the line. All the issues you've raised, I agree with you 100%. And I've reported on them before. You're spot on.
Okay. I appreciate your work on 9/11. And I hope that people in our community refocus on it as the 20th anniversary comes up. We haven't achieved justice yet, but we need to keep propelling it back into the public consciousness, because if nothing else, in memory of all the people who have died as a consequence. And I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, if you check out that article, What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories on Oon's Review, you'll find I've embedded several of the videos I've done about 9/11, perhaps most significantly 9/11, who is responsible and why, which is on BitChute. An interview I did with Brian Rue, R-U-H-E. So if you put in your search bar, BitChute, Brian Rue, Jim Fetzer, 9/11, who is responsible and why, or some combination thereof, you'll be able to turn it up and get a pretty thorough layout of what happened on 9/11. Many may not know I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in 2005. I was flown to Athens for what turned out to be a 3.5-hour interview about 9/11 with a panel, which was broadcast worldwide by satellite. In 2007, I conducted a conference on the science and politics of 9/11 right here in Madison. In 2008, and then again in 2009, I was flown to Buenos Aires, the second time to be the keynote speaker at an international symposium on 9/11 Truth and Justice. In 2010, I organized a symposium on debunking the war on terror in Friends House in London. In 2012, I organized the Vancouver hearings, which were held in that great city. So I have, a lot of collaborative research about this subject, including 2 books, one based on the 2007 Madison Conference, The 9/11 Conspiracy, subtitled The Scamming of America. Because remember, conspiracies only require two or more individuals acting together to bring about an illegal end. So that if it was the official account, if that were true, you'd have a conspiracy. But there's also a much deeper and bleaker conspiracy involved. In fact, it's illustrative that the government has made no change in its position about the alleged 19 terrorists, even though, as David Ray Griffin reported in his magisterial book, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, a half a dozen or more of these guys turned up alive and well the following day and made contact with the British media. Obviously, therefore, they didn't die in any suicide airplane crashes. In fact, all four of the crash sites were fabricated or fake, albeit in different ways, as I lay out the evidence in 9/11, who was responsible and why. Yeah, Bruce, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, yeah, okay. I'm going to leave you with this, then I'm going to have to hang up. Your books have been banned from Amazon, but if you go right now and type in Where Did the Towers Go? Judy Woods, it's still there.
Not a surprise. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Bruce. Bye-bye. You raise very appropriate issues here. Paul from California, join the conversation, Paul.
You know, I had to laugh at your comment about the government has still not revised its position after all the evidence. Yeah, they're never going to revise their position. They can't, right? They can't. I mean, you know, just think about that for a second. So here's the main reason I call. Go ahead.
Well,
you wanted to respond to that?
Let me comment on that. I like that. I did an interview recently with a fellow by the name of James Files, who has claimed to have been behind the grassy knoll and fired the shot that entered JFK's right temple. He served a lengthy prison sentence, but he's out now. And I wanted to hear his side of the story. He actually came to Madison, and we had a lunch together on me, since they'd driven up from Chicago. And I've done an interview, actually two interviews that you can find online on my BitChute site, one primarily with his wife, Pamela, who's a very good author, where they published three books already about his purported role here, but a second with James himself. And he's been a wonderful source about the mob and his background and involvement in politics and the structure of the mob and who is really calling the shots and all that. As I have explained to him, I believe that his role, he's fulfilling a role as a purported second gunman on the grassy knoll. If you went back to research, say, around 1965 or so, I think he would have received a very warm reception. But today we know so much more. I have, eight different shooters. I've identified six by their name, rank, serial number, where they were positioned, the shots they took, the effects they had. Ole Domegaard, a seventh, which with it I agree. We have an eighth on the south, the opposite by a tree, where I have seen photographs, two different photographs of a shooter there with a rifle standing. You wouldn't think there was any way he could conceal himself there, but he did. And what James explained to me was that once the government commits a lie, it's stuck with it. It has to stick to it. So this is just a confirmation of what you're saying, which is why I wrote to James to explain, that I believe he's been assigned a role and that he's sticking to it and he's doing an admirable job. The ironic aspect, I like this guy tremendously. I really like the guy as a person. And, I just recommend checking out those two videos you can find on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. They're both there with Pamela and James Files and with James Files. Not to cut you off, Paul, I just like that point that I wanted to underscore, just as you observe. It's like with the moon landing, right? When is the government going to come clean on the moon landing? We didn't go to the moon. We couldn't go to the moon. We didn't have the technical or scientific ability to go to the moon. It's an absurdity. But will the government ever acknowledge it? It seems very unlikely. Go ahead, Paul.
The other thing is kind of funny. I think some of the listeners might agree. when you say, you know, graciously as you do, I didn't mean to cut you off. You don't necessarily cut people off. Like, for example, I asked you, I said, well, oh, did you want to respond to that? And you did. But what happens sometimes, you press one of your many buttons from your pre-recorded knowledge bank, and just a flow of consciousness just comes out. What I was going to say, as interesting as all that was or is about, you know, the JFK assassination that you just recounted, you know, it's essential human nature. And I see it confirmed, for example, in this one job assignment I have periodically now on weekends. There's a kind of an event function near a major shopping center that was just built, okay? And the owner of the shopping center doesn't want, you know, people parking there from this event function. And so, you know, we have to basically just keep an eye and watch for people that park and start to walk the other direction, right? So it's pretty straightforward. And sometimes it's kind of fun because people play like a cat and mouse game. Like they'll park and they'll try to fake you out. They'll go into a store and then, you know, they'll come out of the store and then, you know, go across the street. And you sort of have to remember them from their vehicle, you know, because essentially, you know, you've got to tell them, hey, we're going to tow you. Well, anyway, here's what I found is very interesting, Jim, just a little bit of human nature along this idea of like sticking with the lie or sometimes lying when it's not necessary to lie. So I'll catch people just by I can tell by the look of them, just by like the way they park, their body language when they get out, and sometimes what they kind of look like. I just get a vibe, right? And so as I'm driving around in my little security vehicle, I'll say, just so you know, there's no event parking here in this lot. It's only for the shopping center only, blah, blah, blah. And they'll go, oh yeah, we weren't going to go there anyway, you know. So, okay, fine. And then I'll watch them, and sometimes it's as quickly as 30 seconds. Sometimes they'll linger for a minute or two. And then they get in and they drive away, right? Which, of course, is silly because all they got to do is say, oh, yes, okay, thank you, you know, or yeah, we'll go ahead, we'll find somewhere else to park. No, they'll actually lie. They'll go, we weren't going to go there anyway. And then they'll just get in their car and go, which, of course, tells me they weren't going to shop at the shopping center anyway. They know they've been caught and they got to go and park somewhere else, which you can nearby on other streets. But, you know, the point being is that I catch people lying to me all the time when they don't have to lie. And in many cases, I can't tell you how many times they continue to stick with some stupid story. So I think this is confirmed by all of us in our regular lives. And the government is never, ever going to give up these lies that they've spun to us over and over the years. And I know we're probably coming up on the break, but the main reason for my call was to address this Wuhan lab story and Fauci and the funding and so forth, yeah, and so on. And I want to use logic, you know, the way that you use logic to kind of break this down. But I'm just going to say right now that to me, it staggers the imagination that people could still think there's some kind of new virus or a more deadly virus or any kind of virus at all when the mortality tables are unchanged or in many cases, as you said, were actually down a little bit. So how is that possible? You know, we'll leave alone the bigger picture that viruses cause illness, which is, in my opinion, remains unproven. But the fact of the matter is it's got to be the worst investment ever in bioweapon research if they could never produce a so-called virus or gain a function that made anybody sick. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, yeah. No, when I'm reporting those stories, I always have the caveat in mind that there is so much evidence that this is all a fabricated pandemic anyway, you know, including the absence of a spike in mortality in the European nations when it was supposed to be breaking out. The fact we have the study from Johns Hopkins showing no increase in any age group, supplemented by the failure to be an increase in sales of oxygen tanks or HIV stands and drips. The fact that the life insurance company hasn't adjusted their premiums, which they'd have to do of necessity if there were an increase in deaths. So I'm inclined to believe the pandemic is a fabrication to set up a mental state to induce you to take the vaccine, whereas the vaccine is the pandemic. Paul, I agree with all that. The problem is it just becomes complicated to say it all at the same time, but I appreciate very much your call for that clarification. I like that. Good.
Right, and I want to go a little bit further using the logic now, and I think I could probably get agreement out of you with this. Let's take these people at their word, and let's take all the various suppositions, or we'll call it conspiracies, that they want to do us in, they want to do us harm, they want to depopulate us, they want to do all these things. So let's stay with that for a moment. Okay, and so now they're going to try to use a bioweapon, gain of function bioweapon, virus, strain, all this stuff to do it. Are they going to then tell us that's what they're doing? Are they going to then tell us to stay home and to wear a mask and to stay apart when, if the viruses do spread the way that they say they spread, that would defeat the whole purpose of coming up with the weapon in the first place, right? No, they wouldn't do that at all. It makes no sense. That's why I don't believe it for a second. If they were going to go ahead and do a bioweapon and a virus and all that stuff, they wouldn't tell us about it. That's how you know it's BS, because everything they do is the opposite. Everything they do is inversion, correct? Now, let me just take this brief moment also to take a run at some guy in the comment section that I periodically read, Panzerfaust, who's continually running his mouth. If he just did something once or twice, fine, but he continues to run his mouth in the comment section about things that I say. So recently he said something along the lines of, I called him a liar for him saying that he had COVID-19, right? Or that the COVID-19 was fake. Well, guess what? If you listen to this show and you make use of the internet and you make use of your brain, if you think you had, quote, COVID-19, you're a retard, not a liar. And I never said viruses are fake. What I said on many occasions is what many other researchers said, is that they're particles. They're pieces of something. They're not living. And multiple medical definitions, which you can look up online, Panzerfaust, you retard, that they don't live. They don't consume or excrete anything. They don't have any sexual or asexual reproduction. They don't have cellular respiration because they're not a cell. And for the most part, they're part of the human terrain, just like fungus and just like bacteria, and they do not cause harm, and there's been no experiments to ever show that they cause harm. And just quickly on the gain-of-function nonsense that I've been hearing promoted by many different people, not just Giuseppe, I just don't buy it. It makes no sense to me. First of all, what function are you claiming is being gained? That's what I don't get. What function do viruses have, and how are you, quote, gaining this function? And, Jim, just taking the fact that viruses are, what, microns or submicrons, completely baffles my mind to think how somebody's going to go in to some submicron particle and do something to it. And then, since they don't reproduce on their own, how is this gain-of-function little anomaly going to be maintained?
Paul, listen, thanks for calling in. I think you took a bit advantage of the situation here. We'll come back after the break. Thanks very much.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Before I turn to our next caller who is standing by, I want to report one more story. Namely, Fort Campbell commander warns unvaccinated soldiers no pass or leave off base and non-deployable until vaccinated. This is a very bad development. The threats continue. A twisted way to get our troops to get the COVID vaccine is a morale buster because it punishes anyone who doesn't get the COVID vaccine. Freedom to refuse the vaccine is limited if the troops feel threatened with punishment, like not seeing their loved ones or really just getting off the base for R&R. Fort Campbell's commander, whom were I commander-in-chief, would dismiss, is warning unvaccinated troops they will not be able to travel freely over the summer and will be considered non-deployable until they get the COVID vaccine. Even though it's optional, because it only has emergency approval from the FDA. Troops will be penalized if they aren't vaccinated. Although most soldiers have reported and said they would be vaccinated, fewer and fewer have been getting it. I also have 120 retired military flag officers warning that the United States is under assault by socialists and Marxists urging Americans to fight back. This is a very surprising and unexpected development. More than 120 retired generals and admirals have signed a letter questioning the legitimacy of the 2020 election and Joe Biden's physical and mental health. I think that's completely appropriate and very a good thing to do. Meanwhile, we have a Space Force officer relieved after denouncing Marxism and critical race theory in the military. I find this really quite shocking. A U.S. Space Force commanding officer was removed from his post after publishing a book that warned of the spread of Marxism and critical race theory in the military. I'm with the officer. He should not have been relieved. He ought to have been promoted. Scaredy Cat, you've been very patient standing by. Join the conversation, Scaredy.
Hi, Jim and Mitch and Bruce from Texas and Paul from California. Hey, Jim, I might get kicked off the show today before Paul from California. But before I get to that larger point, I had a quick question, housekeeping regarding revolution.radio and archives. So would the station consider burning CDs and selling them to persons such as myself, the Raw Deal Show, you could consider it, because I was, when Paul English was talking about his reading, his audio reading of Tom Goodrich's excellent Hellstorm written book, I think the publisher, David Geheri, said it's about 14 hours long. So I'm thinking on one CD, I hope he got it on one CD. I'm not sure of that. But if he did, then that would be 7 Raw Deal shows, roughly 1.5 months worth. And it would really help people like me who listen to your talk radio, because I only really have my mother's landline phone. And number two, I have the CD player in my daughter's car for listening to songs and music. So with these two pieces of advanced technology, I would love to buy CDs of your show. And if Revolution Radio management and host could consider it, and to make a little bit of profit for Revolution of Radio, if it's too much work, then maybe they can talk to a publisher who does burn CDs. And because simply there's so much I miss, I think I gain about a quarter of what's said due to the fast speed of the conversations. So that's
well, Scarity, that's a really wonderful idea. I will, Mitchell and I will talk about it and kick it upstairs and see if something could be done along those lines. I think that's a really valuable suggestion. Proceed.
Okay, I hope Paul from California is still on the line, because today might be the day I get kicked off first. So, sorry, here goes. It might be considered rudeness, but Mitchell Bupp, our marvelous morning newsreader, mentioned National Bootlickers Association. I wrote it down. So, of course, he is meaning the NBA, National Basketball Association, and he's upset expressing contempt for their kowtowing, to China. And I would suggest that not only sports, but all of America and all of our planet, not all of our planet, I leave the animals alone, but our human family is now having the, this licking theme. Well, how did I say it? JFL. Now that we have abandoned football and the National Football League, NFL, what's being imposed on us is JFL, Jew Foot Licking. And it's rampant and growing by the day, it seems, even at revolution.radio. Every day another host comes out with cattle car, Auschwitz. And
very good, dear.
Okay, so should I stop a little bit or go on?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Scarity. I want to hear a little more. Go ahead, and then we'll bring back Paul and we'll continue the conversation. Go ahead.
Okay, because I think 99, maybe 98% of humanity is engaged in it happily, because they wouldn't do it except all the money is trapped in these huge corporations. And just as a side point, we should not mention corporation. As soon as you say YouTube, mention who's doing it. The US CEO, as I told you before, I consider them mostly, not the Christian guy who got kicked off by it. He's a CEO, chief executive officer. You mentioned Pillows, Mike Lindell, the Christian Patriot CEO. So he's a true chief executive officer. So the rest of them are cruelty enjoyment officers. And the one who did it to him was, I forget, Susan Wojcicki. You can see that us human beings, you know, 98% of us are not vicious and vindictive, because half the time we can't even remember their names. So I just remember it this moment. I think it's something like Susan Wojcicki, W-O-J-I-C-K-I, I think Polish, from Poland's name, maybe. YouTube, as soon as you say that, you should say Jewess, YouTube CEO Jewess Susan Wojcicki. Mention everybody's religion. If it's a Muslim, say the Muslim bad guy so-and-so did this. If it's a Christian, mention Christian, because it's really important now. Because I know Mitchell is trying to get elected, at least I think so, and I clap and applaud for him that his platform is corruption fighting, public officials' corruption. Yet he always mentions the word nut job in front of Muslim. The Muslim nut job did this. Never the Christian nut job, which I don't actually want that to be mentioned, because I think Christians, white people, Europe and her descendants need to be protected. And I told you, I summarized it in a sentence before to you, Jim, that humanity's supreme cause, and I'm doing a little bit of wordplay on their white supremacy garbage fiction. So I'm saying humanity's supreme cause is the protection of Europe and her descendants, including Muslims, which the Jews are using to take Christian jobs in England and America. So Jews shouldn't be doing that. If Jews hadn't bombed using Christian hands, so then they can blame Christians, using Christian hands to drop bombs on Muslims, so now everybody say, oh, the white guy is bad. But it was the Jews' desire to take that, as your friend Rolf Lindgren put it on your last show, that itsy-bitsy, you know, cute little spider bit of land in the Middle East. And by the way, it's not the Middle East. It's, again, we have to watch our words. So another side point is just to say it's West Asia. The Muslim countries in West Asia got a strip of land stolen from them by Jews. And then everybody is coming out of the woodworks, as they say, using that phrase, maybe imaging termites, saying, the Jews are nice. Well, half of Jews, about what, 6 million? There's your magic number. 6 million living Jews in Palestine are the ones who stole inch by inch. I saw a photo of a little kid, maybe four, five, 6 years old. It was a little girl with a cute little ponytail with her swing set being bulldozed. And I think she didn't quite understand what was going on. Obviously, with American company Caterpillar or John Deere or something, a bulldozer, this Jew was digging up her swing set, which her father put up. And not only with that, the father will lose the land, the little bit, itty-bitty land his house sits on, for that little girl and his wife and, you know, the rest of the family. And Israel also, so, you know, people often talk about the two stripes being the Jews' desire to kidnap the land between the Nile River and the Euphrates River. Euphrates River, guys, isn't just a name. It's the river, important river, you know, around modern Iraq. And the Nile, most people do know, is the important river around Egypt. And those are two important Muslim countries. And so soon the rivers, what will happen is, you know how they are now taking inch by inch, yard by yard, the surrounding the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. What happened? They take one more inch. I think they're evicting what 50 families, 100 families, that next bit of inch, that next bit of yard, what you just saw happening on the Jews flag is the two blue river stripes. The upper one just moved a little bit upper towards the border of the cloth, and the lower one just moved a little bit lower towards the bottom edge of the cloth. And soon those two stripes are just going to go off the cloth, because then the Israel, which has not declared borders, Jim, and I want to underline, it is not a real country. So none of us should use the word Israel. Israel is a Christian idea, and it was stolen by Jews to give the name, that piece of land. And when the two stripes fall off, expanding the area, that you will know the what people call the NWO, New World Order, then other people who are a little braver say JWO, Jew World Order. Really, the O doesn't stand for order. It stands for ownership. So Jew World Ownership will be complete when the two stripes fall off that white flag.
Okay. Well, scary. I certainly agree with your heartfelt sentiments here. I mean, the legal history of the creation of Israel is much more complicated. I mean, goes back to the Balfour Declaration after World War I. It has to do with Stalin and Churchill and Roosevelt after World War II. And, you know, the founding of Israel was a complicated international decision. It wasn't just that the Jews sought to stake out a claim in Palestine. I agree that many of their arguments are of dubious historical accuracy. And I appreciate many of the points you're making, but I would just suggest there's a little more to the story here from a legal historical point of view. Meanwhile, we have another caller, Michael from North Carolina. Michael, join the conversation.
Hey, guys. I heard Paul speak earlier on viruses, and I wanted to chime in basically to agree with what Paul was saying. I think the whole viral pandemic thing is a deception from start to finish. And I wanted to throw in another point of logic other than those that Paul covered. And that is, it's an analogy to what happened on 9/11. For instance, when the discussion has been, were there actually 19 hijackers who hijacked planes? One of the good points of logic that's brought up is, if we know that the 9/11 operation was planned for a long time. It was very complex, and it involved a lot of moving parts. And if you were in that position, would you leave the success of an operation that huge up to 19 non-pilots to see if they might be able to hijack planes and might be able to fly them into towers? No, the whole thing is totally absurd. So the analogy being, we have, 19, 20 different evidentiary points that show that this whole COVID, worldwide COVID operation, was also planned for many, many years. Dry runs with different kinds of viral claims, and they finally decided to pull it off. And if you had that extensive planning for an operation that's worldwide and involved this big a deception, would you leave it up to something that somebody had maybe created in a lab and released in Wuhan without any real knowledge whether it would turn out to be a vast pandemic at all, no matter what happened in a lab? No, you wouldn't do that. This whole thing has been a deception. The whole viral pandemic paradigm is a deception in the first place, as is being shown by many good visionary doctors these days.
I think you're not going to get any argument from any of us about that, Michael, including the key role of Bill Gates, who provided, you know, tons of money, not only to the World Health Organization, to the CDC, to Imperial College, where we had the Nigel Ferguson fake pandemic model that was predicting we were going to lose over 2 million Americans and 500,000 Brit if the countries weren't shut down right away. I think we agree with all of the above, Michael, and certainly the story about 9/11 is completely indefensible. If you think of it as a theory suspended in space that's connected to the world, to reality, by little threads or anchors or chains, including, say, the 9/11 phone calls or the plane crash sites or, you know, the 19 Islamic terrorists and the like, every one of those has been decisively debunked and refuted. And I just reiterate, anyone who wants to get like the current state of discussion and debate about 9/11, go to my piece on Oon's review, What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories, because the latest efforts to try to preserve or apologize for the official account can be found there. Let me return to Paul for comments on both what Michael and Scarity have had to say. Paul.
Yeah, no, thank you for that support, Michael. But I wanted to comment on what Scarity said. So first of all, Scarity, yeah, some great points early on about, and I love the way that you phrased the Jew boot licking or the Jew foot licking. Yeah, that's a good one. I'll give you a couple points for that. I don't think you have any worries about getting kicked off the call. That's my domain. That's what I do. So you're safely on the team, Scarity. But a couple of things that she mentioned, which I think are worth, so she probably has noticed what I have noticed, that many hosts on Revolution Radio are not fully awake. I still hear things being said about Zyklon B gas chambers. I had her specifically said this weekend by Ivy West. I understand she's very well-liked and has a following on the Revolution Radio. Many other hosts have also talked about the Nazis and the gas chambers and the Holocaust, and I don't get this at all, because this was a done deal in the 80s. When I encountered the information in the 80s about construction that took place in the concentration camps after the war, after they fell into Russian hands, about no evidence that these gases were used, that none of them could have been used for a gas chamber, that they weren't built as such, and on, the hoax of the 20th century was out back then. I don't understand how people can still believe this. They're just not doing their homework. But having said that, I've recently come across some great shows. An example, I highly encourage everybody to go back in the archives and listen to William Grant's show this last Saturday, where he had a guest on and they talked about mercury toxicity. That was the majority of the show. They delved into some other areas. But it was one of those shows where I was taking a lot of notes. And when I take notes on a show, that means there's a lot of good stuff, and I highly recommend people listen to it. Also, Jim, you know, you have published on your site an excellent article by Jack Mullen with two videos embedded in the article. I recommend everybody go and watch those videos. I have not finished the first one, which is nearly 2 hours. And Jim, I'm pretty sure you have not watched that video either, but it is a mind blower. So basically, everybody go and look at those videos that Jack Mullen has posted, because they are absolutely phenomenal.
Well, you're certainly being a model citizen today, Paul, and there's no risk of getting the boot today. Let me come back to Michael from North Carolina for his further thoughts. Michael.
Well, I just wanted to throw in that the analogous thing to what we talked about the 19 hijackers and basing the whole operation on whether they were successful or not is even more so the case. This worldwide operation that we've got going right now, I think that even the first word of it coming out of Wuhan and all the publicity that we got about the radical shutdowns that they were doing, I think all of that was laid out beforehand.
Yes, and that was the psychological operation in the beginning. There's multiple layers to this onion. They love to get us chasing down rabbit holes that don't lead anywhere. And I just think that was their first fear factor, right? Oh, no, what's going on in China? Oh, no, it could spread over here. Oh, no, look at people dying, Wuhan lab. It's all deception. It's all been nonsense. I called it on the show when I said it was a snipe hunt, because by now, just like you, Jim, just like you're so aware of so many things now, you just see it before it's even there. And if you're aware of what these people do and how they do it, you just automatically see it. You just know. And Michael, I believe that's correct.
That happened with me back in the middle of last March when they first announced the 14-day shutdown. They didn't just announce the shutdown. They started rolling out these things that put on the floor to be socially distanced. And I thought, oh, here we go. This is all a long planned thing.
I published a piece years ago with Preston James entitled Peeling the 9/11 Onion, the layers upon layers of deception. And we have a similar situation with a coronavirus onion, layers upon layers of deception. I certainly agree with all of that. Scaredy, would you like to add a further thought here as we reach the end?
I'd love to, and love to say that I love Bill Grant's, his personality, actually his character comes through, and also his personality is so lovable, how he chooses his words so correctly, and then as soon as you have a question in your mind, he's already, then that's his next sentence. And so I do want to publicize it. It was the day before yesterday, and it comes on Saturday evenings at 10 o'clock in the evening on the Eastern Coast, America's East Coast time zone. And also to underline Bill Grant's show about mercury toxicity, it is very important to help people. So we can talk about history and so on, but it's, I think, the most impact and actually the most satisfaction in life we will get is to actually help people, how Bill Grant was doing with mercury toxicity alerting us. And so to that end, I think the main part of helping people is to untrap the money and let the money circulate amongst ourselves in terms of entrepreneurship.
Let me express my appreciation to Bruce from Texas, Paul from California, Michael from North Carolina, Scaredy Cat. Excellent calls today. I appreciate each and every one. Many excellent points. I remind everyone, check out Oon's Review, What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories. You won't be disappointed. Meanwhile, my appreciation of Revolution Radio, which is doing a great job of standing up for freedom of speech. We need more in the USA today. Thank you all for joining us. Back next week.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you? We'll be right back.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that